This is a republic if you can keep it. Political news and commentary with Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer.
I'm Jeff Timmer. Welcome to the Let's Nuke Gaza edition of A Republic If You Can Keep It. That is apparently the new Middle East strategy for Michigan's unremarkable and brain-dead Congressman Tim Walberg. Donald Trump invents a consolation call and more than a few so-called facts in a Grand Rapids harangue. And Dan Kildee drops a big hint about his preferred successor in Congress.
And I'm Mark Brewer. A federal court okays a new state house district map, which tilts that map even more in favor of the Republicans than the previous version. Two special elections later this month will bring the state house back to full strength. And the Republican candidate in one of those races is called out for promoting a new state abortion ban. And Michigan's Republican Party, not clear which faction, calls a statement from the mayor of Baltimore, quote, another shining example of colored communism. That and a lot more in our podcast this week. But Jeff, let's start with a couple of stories on issues that helped Democrats tremendously in 2022 and are still playing out. And that's reproductive health care. Just this week, a Florida ballot proposal protecting reproductive rights got onto the Florida ballot. We continue to see special elections in which abortion remains a significant issue. What are your thoughts on the continuing importance of the abortion issue this year?
Well, it's too early to say that Florida's electoral votes are going to be in flux this fall. But I think it's safe to put an asterisk on the statement that they might be. Florida has been looked at the last couple of cycles as a safe Republican district or state after spending years in the toss-up category in the infamous 2000 recount between Gore and Bush. But it's leaned decidedly toward the Republicans in recent years. And this is the kind of issue we've seen in state after state since the Dobbs decision that could have significant impact on the turnout. Turnout in an election, in a presidential election year, is always high, but the enthusiasm behind the turnout, especially among center-right, center-left voters who are going to decide close elections. We saw it in Kansas. We saw it in Ohio, very red states where abortion measures were defeated. Overwhelming support in Florida. I think what they need to get 60% across the threshold to amend the Constitution. But it's what history tells us in other states is that they could flirt with that mark. 60% seems to be the over-under for these kinds of measures. So it could significantly realign the chessboard of presidential politics, and it could bring the reelection of Rick Scott, the former governor, now first-term senator running for reelection. It could bring him into the spotlight again. He barely won his race back in 2018. It was just by a handful of votes. He's got a challenger who's a former member of Congress, a woman from Miami area, Latina, and she is raising a lot of money. So it could change the Senate landscape. It could change the presidential landscape of the Trump campaign if the Republicans are having to put defensive money into Florida. It makes it easier for Biden to win that blue wall along the Great Lakes, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And with another development this week in Nebraska, where they looked to switch to a winner-take-all in the electoral vote from their current bi-congressional district awarding of electoral votes, that one electoral vote that Biden is expected to get from the Lincoln-based University of Nebraska district, It loomed large, because without that blue wall would only bring Biden to 269 electoral votes. With Florida potentially being on the map, it causes both parties to look at how they're going to allocate resources and make strategic decisions that could have impact elsewhere.
That's all good analysis, Jeff. I think there's some tough hurdles for the Democrats there to overcome. The state is terribly gerrymandered in terms of the legislature and the congressional seats. You make a good point about the Senate race on a statewide basis. The Democratic Party is quite weak because of the gerrymandering and the lack of investment there over the years. But despite all that, the Biden campaign teased that it might get involved there this week. Who knows if that's a feint, right, to try to draw Republican money there along the lines that you indicated and divert resources from elsewhere. But it certainly adds some complexity to the political analysis, national and local, for all the campaigns this year. Yep, I also want to turn to another topic, a big development this week. No Labels decided it is not going to go forward and put together a presidential ticket and attempt to draw voters toward what they thought would be, wanted to be, a centrist party. What are your thoughts on the political implications of No Labels pulling back?
It's a significant development for anybody who's concerned about the continuation of democracy in the United States. It was always a foolhardy effort. The concept behind No Labels on paper, the fact that they were making this presumption that a majority of Americans, or certainly a plurality of Americans, have had enough of the two-party system. And I can understand that. So the theory behind it was presenting another option. The problem with that whole theory is our winner-take-all electoral college. The winner is required to get a majority of votes. It was always a doomed strategy. The concept that they could get to 270 electoral votes with a third party candidate was nonsensical. The reality is they wouldn't have even gotten one electoral vote. But what they would have done was provide this fusion ticket, a Republican and Democrat of national prominence running together, and siphon votes from the Biden coalition. These are center voters, moderate Republicans, a lot of them, who will not vote for Donald Trump. And they reluctantly voted for Biden despite ideological or policy differences in 2020. Given the concept is given a choice, they would choose somebody more aligned with their ideology or policy, and that being a more moderate kind of Republican fusion ticket that No Labels was looking at running here. And when you look at how close Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, Georgia were, those states were decided by fewer than 500,000 cumulative votes. Could No Labels have siphoned off 12,000 votes in Georgia? Could they siphon off 10,000 votes from Biden in Arizona? The answer is yes. And that those votes would have come off of Biden's tallying and made Trump the winner with a plurality of votes in those states, propelling Trump to an electoral vote victory. So the math has always been clear to anybody who understands presidential campaigns and presidential campaign history. And it's terrific that No Labels has decided to fold their tent. It is unfortunate that maybe the event that precipitated it was the sudden tragic death of Senator Joe Lieberman, the former Democratic vice presidential nominee, longtime senator turned independent. But right after, within a week after he died, he was leading the effort, they folded their tent. And so bad for the Lieberman family, good for democracy.
I agree with you with your analysis. And they did run through quite a list publicly and privately of potential candidates, Joe Manchin, Chris Christie. There's a lot of folks, and I'm sure there are others that turned them down behind the scenes, and they really struck out. There was a rumor before the unfortunate death of Senator Lieberman that he was going to be their candidate of last resort. But again, tragic death. We mourn his loss and remember all the contributions he's made to us in the United States. But I say good riddance to No Labels. Robert Kennedy remains a threat. He or his super PAC are circulating petitions in Michigan, among many other states, trying to get on the ballot. And he also has no chance of winning, but could be a spoiler and help elect Donald Trump. So we'll see how that all plays out with the Kennedy effort. But these third parties, as they were in 2016 and did in 2016, could play a significant role in the presidential race.
Well, Mark, let's turn a little closer to home here in Michigan. And there, no surprise, Joe Biden and Donald Trump are both paying a lot of attention and both visiting the state recently, and I'm sure over the next 7 months we'll continue to do so, given the large number of electoral votes and the importance of Michigan in this presidential race. But what we've seen is this issue of border security, border politics. It certainly looms large in the national race, but now Michigan is as far away from the southern border as you can get. But the southern border issue has reared itself in Michigan in very tragic format with a murder in Grand Rapids conducted by an undocumented person, or he's in custody awaiting trial on this murder. Let's talk about the border politics, in particular, Trump's visit to Michigan this week.
As much a demagogue as he is, I think smart politically for him to show up and exploit that unfortunate death, which was really more, it was a domestic violence incident. It had nothing to do with border security or immigration or anything else. But he and the group of sheriffs that showed up behind him and supported him were quick to take advantage of it. And his pitch is that this is not just an issue of border security, that illegal immigration and so forth are a threat to everybody everywhere, that every city and township has become the border in terms of these security and criminal issues. The Democrats push back, but I got to tell you, Jim, I think the Democrats need to do a better job on pushback. Look, they had this bipartisan bill that the president was prepared to sign that Trump blocked. Not only should we talk about that, but that bill had some great provisions in it. More customs and border protection folks, more asylum officers, more immigration judges, speed up the process, more border security, including drug interdiction efforts. There's nothing wrong with being in favor of strong border security. And the Democrats need to say that. And they're tiptoeing around the edge. They're making good arguments. It's terrible he's exploiting this. This was really domestic violence, et cetera. But they need to hit harder on this issue. One of my political heroes, Robert Kennedy Jr., I thought gave a great piece of political advice, and I always try to remember. He says, look, you've got to talk about issues where the voters are. The voters want to talk about immigration. They want to talk about border security. It's not the only issue. And they want to talk about it. And you've got to talk about it. You can't ignore it. And you can't run away from it. And I think Democrats could do a much better job of dealing with it.
100% agree, Mark. I think the fact that the border issue and border security has turned into a negative for Joe Biden is largely an unforced error. We have a unique circumstance where we don't have just a challenger to an incumbent president. We have an incumbent president challenging an incumbent president. And Donald Trump has a record. And his record on the border is one of failure. He rode to the White House on a pledge of build the wall, make Mexico pay for it, stop the porous border. He failed miserably. He failed at every aspect of border security. And Joe Biden should have, from day one, I think, leaned in on the issue because it is a bipartisan issue. This is not just an R and D divide. Having secure borders is a must for any country. We need broader immigration reform. That's a separate issue. The issue of border security itself is one that Biden should have leaned into from day one. I know I was glad to see the kind of counteroffensive they went on and have gone on to an extent since Trump tanked the bipartisan bill. They don't. The fact is that Republicans don't want to fix this issue. They want to campaign on this problem. And so they want the problem to always be there, because if it's not fixed, it remains this potential fulcrum for fear that they can use to exploit what could be a strength for Biden. And that is a plummeting violent crime rate compared to when Donald Trump was president, a better economy, all these things, that there is so much on paper that is going in favor of Biden that the Republicans need to create this point of fear and use, in some cases, outright fiction, as Trump did in Grand Rapids this week, as the Republicans in Michigan have with another case. There was this outright lie about undocumented being involved in some child sex trafficking. The case is real. The perpetrators are not undocumented aliens. It's just making things up out of whole cloth to fit the narrative that they want. Looking at it from just a pure political practitioner standpoint, it's not unwise for the Trump campaign to go into Grand Rapids, which is going to decide that the Grand Rapids media market is going to decide how Michigan's vote goes. If whoever wins Kent County is likely to win the state, going in there and creating a trail of fear, destruction, dystopian future is the only thing that can propel Donald Trump to a victory in Kent County. It's a long shot.
Yeah. Another issue, though, Jim, that I'm also concerned about, and I don't think the Democrats are taking seriously enough, is Trump is making some inroads among young minority male voters. Don't get me wrong. He's not going to win that demographic by any means. We both know this is a game of inches or even less than inches, and peeling off voters who should vote for the other candidate or getting them to stay home is part of the strategy. And there's data to support this. Trump has been spending money on radio ads in Michigan and spent resources in other states trying to, again, appeal to young, non-college educated minority males. There seems to be somewhat, and I don't want to use the word realignment, but we have now a sharp division between the parties based on education level, right? With then be more college-educated voters of all races moving toward the Democrats and away from the Republicans. On the other hand, non-college-educated voters are tending to move toward the Republican Party, with the exception, so far, of minority voters. But that's starting to fracture. That's starting to crack. And Trump is taking advantage of that to try to pull away some of those, again, young men, non-college educated, working class, minority voters. And something the Democrats, I think, need to take seriously and develop a message focused on holding on to those voters, not losing them to Trump.
I think you are correct. We are seeing some erosion, some real erosion of the younger, it's skewed strongly toward males in black vote and Latino vote in across the country, in Michigan, elsewhere. And this isn't the kind of thing that you just formulaically put out there and run some Spanish language ads in states. And there's a reason these voters are switching. They're swayed by a populist message. They're swayed by economic anxiety, concern about their future. And they're not necessarily sold on Republicans, but they're losing enchantment with Democrats. That's a real problem. Elections aren't a zero-sum game, though. I think, yes, the Democrats in the Biden campaign need to focus on those voters. But there's also, can they gain elsewhere to make up for lost votes from the segments, the coalitions that we're talking about there? And I think the answer is yes. And there's a potential for them, for the Democrats and Biden, to gain more ground than they lose with black and Latino voters, to gain more ground with college educated white men, the late millennials, Gen Xers, who have been slower to leave the Republican Party than their female counterparts, who have pretty much deserted the Republicans and will never come back. And we are seeing signs of that in the certainly in the 2022 election, in the 2020 election, and kind of the potential for more of the white college vote to leave the Republican Party and go to Joe Biden is real. This is a dynamic shift with, I wouldn't call it yet a realignment, but it's a reshuffling of the deck with these younger voters of color and older white voters being in flux. And so it's looking at things both ways. And I think that it would be a mistake for the Democrats to ignore the problems with younger Latinos and black voters. It would also be a mistake for them not to look at these disaffected Republican conservative voters who were part of the coalition in 20 and 2022 with the same priority as a coalition group that they place on these minority voters.
That's a good analysis. There is an upside. And obviously that varies state by state. In Michigan, as we know, and this is a problem for us historically, we've heard it from Lou Glaser and others, right? That our college educated population is disproportionately low compared to the rest of the country. However, many of them are still traditionally voting Republican. And you're right, Jeff, that I think under the proper circumstances, on a message and appeal could be crafted to continue to pull them away from the Republican Party. Again, it's a game of inches, as you and I both know, in terms of these margins. And of course, we have the continuing problem that we've addressed before. We don't need to revisit today about the Arab American Muslim population, the tension and dissatisfaction there over the ongoing war in Gaza. These are all things that the Biden campaign, they got a lot of balls in the air here in Michigan in terms of dealing with these issues, and they need to deal with all of them, I think, strongly and successfully in order to carry Michigan again in the fall.
Yeah, well, I think the tweet from the Michigan Republican Party talking about colored communism is the kind of thing that should be exploited by Democrats to communities of color to show how the Republicans continue to look at those voters, those citizens, in a disdainful way. It's abhorrent to that kind of language from the official Republican Party or the official Republican Party account. It reflects the views of a lot of Republican office holders and voters. There's the rise of overt racism in their politics, in the party politics, is unquestionable and it's loathsome.
Yeah, same with the nuke NASA comment that you adverted to in our opening from Congressman Wahlberg. Just abhorrent to even make that remote suggestion. And again, I think that's the kind of thing that Democrats need to point to show the true nature of the Republican Party, now thoroughly controlled by Donald Trump.
An update on fundraising in three critical Michigan contests, U.S. Senate, and two targeted congressional seats, after these messages on a Republic, if you can keep it.
One thing I have learned in politics, not all pollsters are equal. There are a lot of bad polls and a small number of good ones. That's why Epic MRA stands out. Epic MRA has been measuring Michigan public opinion for more than four decades. The company has earned a national reputation for integrity and accuracy. In fact, it is rated as the best polling company in Michigan by 538.com. The 2022 election is the latest example of why political professionals rely on Epic MRA. While a lot of other pollsters were calling the key races toss-ups, Epic MRA accurately reported that it looked like a Democratic sweep. And they also reported that the three ballot proposals would all win decisively, which is exactly what happened. It's not just politics. Epic MRA has been the go-to pollster for school districts, local governments, and independent groups who need to know what the public is thinking. If anyone asks me, I'm happy to recommend Epic MRA. For the best in public opinion research, head to epicmra.com.
Show your support for preserving our republic at the A Republic If You Can Keep It merch store. We've got t-shirts and coffee mugs made to order for lovers of our representative democracy. Just go to our website, arepublicpodcast.com, and click on the merch store button. You aren't fully dressed until you have Ben Franklin on your chest. It's the perfect gift for that democracy lover in your life.
Mark, we're seeing some financial fundraising reporting that's coming out. The quarterly reports are coming out. And what signs are they giving us about what races are going to look like this year in Michigan?
Well, a really interesting signing. Slotkin continues her extraordinary fundraising. We saw this when she ran for Congress, and as a member of Congress, what a fundraising powerhouse she was. She's now up to nearly $9 million cash on hand. Jeff, and fresh off another quarter of raising several millions of dollars. She may need it. Michigan is creeping up the charts in terms of Senate seats likely to flip. It's not anywhere near the top of the list, but it's moving up. It could be a more competitive race once we get through this crazy Republican primary. Over in the 7th District, Democratic candidate Curtis Sertel doing gangbusters on fundraising. Another $1.3 million raised last quarter. Couple million dollars cash on hand. I know that Kristen McDonald Rivett just finished the first quarter of fundraising, and I think she got close to $1 million. I think it was around $800,000, which is excellent for a first quarter in a very competitive race. And she got a great boost from the incumbent congressman, Dan Kildee, who's not running again. He double maxed to her $10,000 from his back, and then also gave her $4,000 from his own campaign committee. So that's a clear sign of where Dan Kildee is in terms of his replacement.
Mark, coming up here very quickly, we have two special elections in the Michigan legislature, the House, where two members were elected mayors of their respective cities last fall. Those vacancies will be filled. They're expected to be filled by Democrats, restoring the Democratic majority in the state House to 56-54. We've been tied at 54 seats during these vacancies. Should we expect any surprises or developments here?
I hope not. From a Democratic perspective, Jeff, I know that both candidates, the Democratic candidates, are working hard to close it out, not take anything for granted in terms of those districts. One of the districts, the one in Macomb, is going to change significantly as a result of the recent court order. If the Democratic candidate wins, he's going to have to run in a very different district in the fall. That's the nature of redistricting and so forth. But I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens when the Democrats get back, if they get back, and I think they will, to the majority. We're now hip deep, about to be shoulder deep into reelection time. Filing deadline is on the 23rd. Candidates are getting their affidavits of identity and their petitions in, and they're increasingly focused on raising money and campaigning for the August primary and the fall. The biggest thing awaiting these newly elected reps and their colleagues is the budget. We've got to adopt a budget, and I know that the governor has proposed one, but nothing's been done on that. And there are still a lot of Democratic priorities that didn't get passed last year. So it's going to be interesting to see what, if anything, of those move before people really go into campaign mode. Could be a very interesting lame duck, my friend. I'm predicting the Democrats lose the House, and I think there will be a real push to get a lot of these priorities done. If the Democrats retain the House in the fall, lame duck could look a lot differently. So that's, I think, what I'm watching for, assuming these Democrats hold these seats. What is the legislative agenda over the next few months as we get into the election season?
Yeah, it will be interesting to watch. As you mentioned at the outset of the podcast here, the map that was adopted recently by the Michigan Redistricting Commission, approved by the federal courts who had overturned the previous maps, it does move the overall partisanness of the districts more toward the Republican side. It gives them a better shot in a few districts than they had under the previously adopted maps. I continue to think that the pro-democracy forces are better off, far better off in Michigan with Democratic majorities. It's great to see somebody so inept as Matt Hall leading the Republican effort. And I'll just end my comments here by saying it was interesting to see him standing alongside law enforcement with Donald Trump this week. And when I say standing alongside law enforcement, rather than being questioned by them for his own acts of domestic violence and making death threats.
Yeah, no, really, the hypocrisy of his appearance there. And I know the press tried to press him, push him on that afterwards, and he just completely ignored them. Yeah, it really takes a lot of hypocrisy. And our listeners should not get me wrong. The Democrats can hold the House, but the math that was just adopted makes it more challenging than it otherwise would have been. We both know, Jeff, from our long experience in Michigan politics, this is a very competitive state at the legislative level across the board. And a change here or there, the quality of candidates, quality of fundraising, quality of campaigns can make a huge difference. We have a House that's now 56-54, 1 seat away from being tied, 2 seats away from flipping. So it's going to be a very intense battle heading into the fall for control of the state House.
And then we'll go into 2025, maybe with Kristen McDonald-Rivett heading off to Congress in an open seat there for that could tie the state Senate if it goes to the Republicans. So a lot of interesting games will be ahead here, even after the November elections.
You're right about Kristen McDonald-Rivett. She's the first Democrat to hold a Senate seat in that area in decades. And she did a great job, but that will be a very competitive race if she leaves for Congress. Another week and another year's worth of political news. Time to take a breath.
Next week, Mark and I will come to you from the Michigan Rural Summit at Shanty Creek Resort. If you're interested in attending, there is a link to the summit registration on our website, arepublicpodcast.com.
And if the Republic is still standing, Jeff and I will be back in a week from Shanty Creek. We'll talk with you then.
A Republic, If You Can Keep It, with Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer, is a copyrighted production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.